The call is now being recorded. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Would you like me to do a roll call for you?
Thank you very much indeed.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the Translation and Transliteration Working Group call on the 13th of February. And on the call, we have Chris Dillon, Jennifer Chung, Jim Galvin, Justine Fu, Patrick Lenihan, Peter Dernbach, Peter Green, Petter Rindfuss, Pitinan Kormompatna, Akupatra Wanawit, and Wolfgang Wolf-Ulrich Knoben. And for staff, we have Lars Hoffman and myself, Glenn DeSangevi. And we have apologies from Rudy van Snick, and we have not had any news from Percy Kenyatta, because he often asks for a dial-out, and he has not asked this time. So I think that's all. Over to you then, Chris. Just to remind people, though, to say their name before they speak for the transcription purposes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Glenn. Okay, well, first of all, we have statements of interest. So I'd like to ask if we need to ask this question each call, whether anybody's statement of interest has changed since the last call. Okay, hearing no changes, I'll move into the next part of the agenda, which is the responses from supporting organisations and advisory committees. And since last week, we have had one reply, which is from Linda Corrugado-Steinerberg from the European Commission, and so I would like to speak about that. I emailed the mailing list earlier in the day, and I have put a copy of the letter, and also, oh yes, actually it is just a copy of the letter that we received. So I don't know whether it's possible. It's in the wiki. I don't know whether it's possible to display that. And I also circulated some comments about the letter. So I'm intending to start to pick up those comments. Actually, before I do, perhaps I should ask whether anybody else would like to make comments about the letter, because I think I'm the only one who did so far. Okay, seeing no comments, I'll just get involved with the letter and the comments I made on it. Okay. Oh yes. If you're looking for it in the wiki, then actually it's underneath list of stakeholders contacted, and you get into it through the questions list. Okay, well, looking at the letter, it was extremely helpful and raised some quite interesting issues, I think. And the first one that comes up is that there is a reference, at one point in the letter, it says registrants should be given the opportunity to submit data to the registrar in his own language when registering a domain name. From our experience, there might be extra costs for some of the involved parties, like the registry, the registrar, and or ICANN in the GNSO environment. And really what comes out of that is a question about exactly what those costs are for. So I would say that that is really worth pursuing, and that we should write a letter and actually ask for more detail about that. That's really my first comment. I don't know whether anybody would like to pick that up at all. I can see Peter's agreeing in the chat room. Thank you. Okay. There are some rather interesting comments about who should pay. Basically, it's a sort of a hierarchy, so it's saying registries should bear the cost of translation and transliteration of registrar data, and registrars should bear the cost of translation and transliteration of registrant data. As indicated above, this is the cost of making business. The additional cost should be budgeted in the interest of end users. The transliteration and translation should not have, in any case, an effect on the price registrants bear. Now, the thing that comes out of this is the transliteration and translation should not have an effect on the final price that the registrants bear. Now, effectively, I think it's suggesting a sort of subsidy. For me, I think it is possible that that there will be additional costs for the foreign language work. And the question then is really who picks them up. But unless somebody subsidizes them, then there is a bit of a suspicion that it could affect the registrant price. So for me, that is rather an interesting aspect to this. I've got Jim Galvin just typing something in the chat room. And then there is this, Jim is asking how we distinguish between registrar information and registrant information. It is a very good question. At the moment, I think we've often been speaking as if they are the same thing, but that's probably a question that's worth adding to the wiki. In fact, what are the differences? Yes, that's certainly worth looking at. Thank you for that. But certainly, I think fundamentally that it is possible that translation or transliteration could affect price, and then the question is whether there is a subsidy or whether registrants end up paying it. But it does highlight quite an interesting area. Moving further down, unless there are any other questions about that. There is also quite a lot of talk about possible benefits, and I'm intending to add these possible benefits to the relevant part in the wiki after this call. It's things like a homogeneous IRD resource. Actually, the Who Is resource is quoted as a benefit of transliterating or translating, presumably into English. Using a common language facilitates registration when registrants do not share a common language. Consultation of data by law enforcement also requires a common language. So these are all possible benefits. What we are not saying is what, you know, what rights these various parties have. So we're actually not saying what rights, for example, law enforcement may have, but certainly as a benefit, presuming that they do have some rights, then you know, that you know, the fact that one language is being used would, you know, would be a benefit, and so therefore it goes into the wiki under that heading. Any questions about the benefits part of the letter? Okay, seeing none, I shall continue. The example that comes up in the letter is that we could, so I make that in many cases it wouldn't be necessary to be functioning in so many languages. Sorry, Jim, I didn't see your hand go up. Would you like to say something about benefits?
Yes, thank you, Chris. Jim Galvin here. The only question that occurs to me with respect to benefits is, as we have this discussion, some of the benefits, they're not necessarily in conflict with each other, but there's certainly a relationship between them. And so one of the things I think that we should do as part of our analysis is to compare the benefits and see where the trade-offs are in them. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, certainly I think there is a close relationship between benefits and trade-offs. So, yes, I mean, it's a part of the wiki we haven't really developed yet. So I think certainly what I might do is at least put Linda's benefits in there, and you know, we can then start to add an edit, really, and so, you know, certainly trade-offs will be a part of that. Thank you for that. Okay, so coming back to, I was just mentioning the EU, and I was I was saying that the EU could be rather an extreme case, so they are really having to deal with many languages, and so you know, it may be that typically not, you know, perhaps not so many will be involved, but really the main thing which came out of looking at the letter was that it would be very helpful to think through some scenarios, and I think that is work which I would like to suggest that we do. And the scenarios would be something like, probably start off with some quite simple scenarios. So, you know, you have a French language registrant, so he applies for a domain name in French. So it's quite a simple example, and then we just talk it through and look at it from the point of view of contact information. So actually, that is something I would like to ask people on the call, whether they feel that that sort of scenario-based approach would be helpful. I don't know whether anybody wants to say anything about that, or just to, you know, just to put agree or disagree, perhaps. Got Jim Galvin reckons the scenarios are a good idea. Thank you for that. As I say, I feel that we would do well to to start, and Petter is also agreeing with that, I feel that we would do well to start with very simple scenarios and then make them more and more complicated. Jim, would you like to say something about that?
Yes, please. Thank you. This is Jim Galvin. I wasn't agreeing with scenarios per se. I wanted to observe that the EWG has, in a sense, you know, been starting from scenarios. They created their purposes for registration data, and we're using that as a basis for their work. So I was thinking if we wanted to explore scenarios, we should, I was going to suggest that we start with their example as at least a starting basis for our work.
Yes, I am more than happy to do that. That, you know, we should be linking to things that are already available. Have they actually published something on? Purposes. Yes, I think I have read something. So we just need to link to. It's not even the whole document. I think it's part of a document, if my memory is right. Yes, okay.
Yes, this is Jim again. They've published a draft document twice now, and they have, you know, discussed their purposes for data in both of them.
Yes.
And I suspect since they were fairly consistent, at least in the two versions of their document, that will continue to be true going forward. I wouldn't expect, you know, any significant differences or movement away from those purposes in their final document. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for that. We should certainly revisit that document first. It may also be the case that there is some aspect we want to add. I mean, there is also, I have a feeling that there's almost a sort of a role, not for duplicating, but just, it's rather like we were doing with just collecting examples of addresses. So it's just becoming actively involved rather than just reading other documents. Because I think, oddly enough, if you actually try and do a little bit of work oneself, one sees things which one, you know, doesn't otherwise see. So that's. I hope it will be possible to be quite active in that sort of area, because as I was saying, I think one does tend to see more by being active, even if it's only doing a little amount. Okay, well, let's move on from scenarios and just see if there's anything else in the letter. And yes, sure enough, there was one last point I wanted to pick up, and that is we've got a question about validation. So this is obviously a very important area. Also, I have noticed that sometimes the word validation is used and sometimes the word verification is used. So I don't know whether anybody has a preference for one of those terms over the other. That's a question I would like to ask you. Jim, would you like to say something about that?
So, yes, thank you. This is Jim Galvin. In one of SAC's recent documents, and I'll have to get the exact reference, and I'll post it in the chat room here after I go look it up and forget which one it is. But we made a distinction between verification and validation. It was... Frankly, my assessment, it was arbitrary in the sense that we just made a choice.
Mm-hmm.
We found ourselves that the terms are used, they seem to be used interchangeably. And
yes.
So we sort of created the definition of verification versus validation, and we chose to use one term versus the other. And roughly speaking, verification, we chose to interpret it more as the process, the act of validating. And validation speaks to the state of the data.
I see.
That was just our choice. I'll get the reference and I'll post the words into the chat room so that we have that for consideration.
Okay.
My specific advice to the group would be to make a choice on what we want to do, define it, and then stick with it.
Yes.
I'm not aware of a clear distinction in any kind of standard way as to which is which. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. Now, I notice in the chat room, Sarmad is writing quite a lot, and he says, validation is, are we building the right product? And verification is, are we building the product right? That's an interesting possibility there. Now, whichever one it is, sorry, Jim, would you like to say something about that?
No, just typing in the chat room that, that Wikipedia distinction is essentially what ESSAC did in its document, too. Thank you.
That's good. Thank you for that. Well, either way, I think that we may do well to add a question to our questions which actually deals with this area. It's obviously a key area. We can decide exactly where that goes later, but I think it is another area where we need to. It's worth having a dedicated question for it. So thank you for that. Sorry, Jim, is there something you'd like to add?
No, sorry.
That's all right. Don't worry. It's easily done. Okay, so that means we're probably almost ready to move on to the next point in the agenda, but I'll just ask, are there any other issues anybody would like to raise about that letter before we move on? Okay, thank you very much for that. And so the next part of the agenda is refinements to the proposed questions. Well, we've already had one possible refinement, and that is that we feel that we need to add something on verification and validation. So I'll just come back to the questions which are under part four in the wiki for anybody. For anybody looking at that, and so might as well work through it fairly logically from the beginning. I am quite seriously considering leaving out the second definition. So under number one on the taxonomies, there is a definition from the expert working group on GTLD directory services, which I think includes things which are actually not contact information, as I understand it, and moreover, there are shoulds in the wording, which are things that we don't necessarily want to pick up. So I am considering moving that definition into a sub-document. But, Wolf, would you like to say something about that?
Thanks, Chris. It's Wolf Norman speaking. Not just directed to that point, which you just were on, but I had some comments to the number four question, the stakeholders. Is that okay?
We can certainly pop down there. What would you like to ask?
Well, it's just it came to my mind, this question in the context also with the letter. You just talked about from the EU before that. And the question, the very last question, with regards to cost burden and so on. So it seems to me that we, with regards to the cost burden, so this question is related to the question who of the stakeholders should bear the costs. So it might be understood in that way. So, and what I see, you already put a list together with some stakeholders, and it came to my mind that we should also ask, well, who are the stakeholders? Are we, from my point of view, the so-called involved parties, I would say, in that way. But the question for me is also, don't we have also interested parties? That means parties who are interested to receive those data, not only to just to produce or to provide those data, just to receive those data. And who are they? All of them. Are they covered in the question of who are the stakeholders? And that's to be seen then in the relation of the question of the cost burden. So that's my point.
Thank you, Wolf. That is a very good point. I have been using the word stakeholders in a very, very wide, loose sense. So it really covers all of what you were just saying. But it may be necessary to actually use it in a narrower way, but I think actually if we do end up doing something with scenarios, this is the sort of area that will be covered by it, because as we work through or we use materials created elsewhere which have dealt with this area, I think these issues will become clearer. But yes. Okay. Now there is some chat going on in the chat room about what I was saying a moment ago about leaving out the second definition is not. Oh yes, okay. Because Amma is actually saying that work is not policy. So. Yes, I mean, so he's saying it's not policy, but we can decide to use them or not. So we could also look at that second definition and perhaps use some of it and not other parts. But the reason I was suggesting that we might want to put it out of that document, which I think may end up being part of reports later on, is that. The definition of contact information is rather different from what we've been using, and also the bits that are left when you remove the stuff are actually very similar to what's in the other definition. So my suggestion is we do remove it, but I am happy to if somebody wants to rescue it for a particular reason, then I'm happy to also to talk about that. Then also in the chat room, right? Yes. Oh, right. Okay. So there's also some points being made about validation in the chat room. Okay. And that's the difference between the validation and verification. Apologies to Amar. I realise he does. he'll hear this when he listens to the tape. He can't. He can't hear what we're saying. So that must be very difficult. Okay. So that's the only. Yes, okay. He can hear. He just can't speak. That's better. Okay, that was the only change I was going to suggest to the definitions part of the document. However, there is There is a note that I sent round about translation and transliteration, and I have added that in the wiki so that when you go into the definitions, you will find also various comments. So at the moment, the comments are just what I have been saying about translation and transliteration, but I'm also going to add any other comment to do with those definitions. For example, whether we want to do something with the second definition, that will also go in that comment document. But anyway, let me just pick up some of the points that come up in that note that I wrote about translation and transliteration. I mean, one of them is, I was talking about translation, and I actually got stuck, because anybody who speaks another language knows that there can be different sorts of translations. So that would mean that sometimes you have a translation that's really close to the foreign language. That's one sort. It's just a loyal translation, I suppose. And then you could have another translation that's not very loyal to the original language. It's not a literal translation. It's better English. And I couldn't actually think of a specific example of that. I'm convinced anybody who's ever translated anything is aware of that phenomenon, but I really wasn't able to think of a good example. So basically what I'm asking is if anybody can find a good example of that phenomenon where, you've got a literal translation and then you've got good English and they're actually quite different, then that would really rather help that paragraph I was writing about translation. I mean, it doesn't have to be this moment, but if somebody just has a good idea on that, I would be really grateful. And there is, in fact, another aspect which I didn't put in the note at all, but I will add after this, and that is that apparently this is quite a common phenomenon in mainland China, but it's quite common for organizations to have no English version. So that would be that a particular organization is, if we cook up an example, you could have an example that would be something like Beijing Fan Dian, which, if we were to do a literal translation, it would come out as being the Beijing Hotel, but actually that particular hotel is a small hotel, and it doesn't actually have a formal English translation, so it would actually be incorrect to call it the Beijing Hotel, because they don't use that form. And so I feel that I would like to add something about that phenomenon into these comments, because there are certain situations where if you translate, you are being profoundly unhelpful, because that is actually a translation which nobody is using. To give another example, this came because I was starting to think about scenarios, and so I was imagining a hotel in Paris and thinking, you could imagine a hotel called Hotel Champs-Élysées, so it's literally Hotel Champs-Élysées in the middle of Paris, and then it could have an English form, which would be the Champs-Élysées Hotel, which would be a sort of English version of that. But it ends up being quite difficult, because although you know, perhaps we can find Hotel Champs-Élysées and the Champs-Élysées Hotel on the hotel's notepaper. It may be that they really only use the French form, although the English form exists. So when you actually think of concrete examples, even quite simple ones like that French one, you can sometimes find some rather interesting phenomena. So, you know, it is not only that there are different forms of translation, but there is a problem of usage. So, you know, is this translated form actually used, or do they use the transliteration, or do they just use the original language? It's all of those possibilities. So that's something I will add to those notes about translation and transliteration. Okay, and also I that's a point I made last week. I said last week that translation, because there tends to be different sorts of it, is often not a reversible process, because, you know, often there is more than one good way of doing a translation. That is often not reversible, but there could be an exception where you actually had some kind of a controlled vocabulary. So the example I give in the note is the Japanese word biru. Now, originally that word comes from birudingu, meaning building. So what you could do is say, right, with Japanese addresses, every time you see biru, translate it as building. And so that is effectively a controlled vocabulary. And so at that point, actually building and biru become completely reversible, because there is a controlled vocabulary which links them. I then made a before I continue, I've just noticed there I don't know who put their hand up first, but Petter, would you perhaps like to add something about that?
Yeah, just thanks, Petter, input here. Just a short note that I agree that there are many different options here, but I just feel that in order to not extend our work too much, so it will be impossible to find a solution. We need to keep to, in the way it's possible, the more official translation versions. And in the examples you gave for, when it comes to company names, for instance, in most countries, there is an official and an alternative translated but still official version, and then it's completely different what maybe the public, the common public, call that company. But if you keep to the official translations as far as possible.
Thank you for that. That is tremendously helpful. I think there are many occasions where the word official is very useful to us. So, you know, also with transliteration, we may want to use the word official, which would actually mean an ISO standard or a government regulation. So I very much like the idea of official. I will give an interesting example here. There is a Japanese company which is called Matsushita in Japanese, and that very often is Panasonic in English. So there can be situations where the original language is completely different from the translation, and using a concept like official is really, really useful. Thank you for that. Wolf, would you like to make a comment about this?
Yes, Wolf Odeknoben from the ISPCP speaking. Well, I wonder whether my question is related to that, what Petter was just pointing out. But it's a question more related to the translation rather than the transliteration, and it's referring to these specific names, to the contact information. We call it in German Eigennamen, Neustadt. Also, in English, it would be new town or what else, but mm-hmm. but you never would translate it, because it's a German city. It's called that way, and it would be called in other languages as well as Neustadt, or the pronunciation might be interest in different way. For me, the question how we deal with these things, Are we going also to think about what kind of words in this contact information are? So these kinds, which really should be translated, or are we going to try to translate all the words, or are we going to exclude from translation those words which are specific names in any language? Which might be pronounced in different way, but this is a different thing, to pronounce Paris in French, Paris, and in German, Paris, and so that's very different. So how we deal with that way? So this is a question from my side. Thanks.
Thank you. When one actually looks at addresses, one sees certain tendencies. In some ways, I'm slightly, there's part of me not wanting to say too much, because I think we may need to look at more languages, more addresses in other languages before we really come off the fence. But what seems to happen at this early stage is that
if you look at addresses, then there seem to be two parts. There is the organizational name part of the address, and then there is the rest of the address. Looking at it at this point, it seems often that the best thing to do with the main part of the address is to transliterate it. Now, at that point, we might want to use the word official, so you transliterate it using an official transliteration. You may then have to do something else. So you may find that your official transliteration has got lots of detail that you don't actually need. Tone marks, that would come to mind. So, we might want to transliterate Beijing, B-E-I-J-I-N-G. We may not want to transliterate it, B-E-I with the third tone mark and then Jing with the first tone mark. That's just going too far. But you see, if you follow the official Chinese transliteration, that's what you have to do. So, anyway, for the main body of the address, it's very early days, but it does look as if transliteration may be really useful. At that point, examples like Japanese biru, do we actually want to change biru into building? Maybe that might conceivably be an exception, but that seems to be what some of this early data is sort of indicating. Now, as regards organizational names, It's the opposite. So there, what we're looking at is official translations, if they exist. So going back to the example I was giving earlier, our little hotel in Beijing doesn't have an official translation, so that's just going to be Beijing Fan Dian. It means Beijing Hotel, but we are not going to use that. We are not going to translate it because there is no official translation. However, in many other cases where there is an official translation, I mean, for example, the hotel which had the ICANN meeting a few months ago, well, a year ago now, that was the Beijing International Hotel. So that would be an official translation, and we wouldn't be using the original Chinese there. So that seems to be a sort of a tendency. Perhaps I've said rather more than I should about that. Would you like to make any comments?
Just add that feel that we need to limit it a bit. And as you said, there are some. The hotel name that we don't really need to translate. We have the still the original, more difficult question, I think, that everything should be readable, even if we don't understand what it is. But to have the two versions, one the Cyrillic version and the other one, the English version, for example, and the Chinese different two, three different versions to be readable in English.
I was really talking only of two versions. So I was saying we should have original. I mean, I was using a Chinese example. I was saying we should have the original Chinese characters. Then for the address, that's a transliterated address in probably some version of Pinyin, and then the organization is going to be a translated name if there is one in existence, if there is an official translation. But that would in fact be otherwise that would be transliteration as well.
Sorry, just a quick add. As we had the German example, for instance, I mean, that's
Neustadt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's readable for us. We have up in the north Sweden our dots on A's and O's that makes it O-I-E, if we take them away, it will be just O's and A's that can be everything. But that's a simple example of what you should do. But once you can read it, so we don't go into a discussion on is it possible to understand. Once we have translated the Chinese signs into English, do we have to really make it a readable word that we understand, that means something, or can it be, so to speak, just translated so that we can read it? We know that, okay, the hotel name is whatever it is, and it may mean something else in Chinese, but at least it's readable.
Yes, I mean, at all stages we would have something readable. I mean, the addresses frequently have a different format. So, you know, it is often the case that in English, numbers come at the beginning of addresses, and in other language, often the number is the very last thing. Actually, funnily enough, very often a database will solve that sort of problem because, you know, there will be something like, you know, there might be different fields. So, you know, that's actually another question that really comes out of this. You know, do we lump the whole address into one field, or do we split it up? If we split it up, then, you know, there may be a separate field for the number at the beginning. And that then does some amount of analysis about, you know, which part of this foreign language address means what. So that means that order doesn't matter so much because the database is actually performing that role. Okay, Petter was wanting to ask a question for a long time. Would you like to ask your question, Petter? I'm sorry, we took a long time to go into that.
You're talking to... I don't think I have a question left.
Okay, sorry about that. Amma has been typing quite a lot in the chat room, so I'm just going to pick that up. There's something about Arabic. So here we've got situations where the same word in one dialect or one language means something totally different in another. I think if we're dealing with official translation sort of organizational names and transliteration of addresses, I don't think it's not a really big issue. Now, there is also a point that Amma is making about the Norwegian sound, but I'm afraid I don't yes, in Norwegian, that's the O with the dash through the middle of it. If you do not have a Norwegian keyboard, you have to write only O. You don't do OE or anything like that. And so you may end up with several Norwegian words coming together and meaning the same thing because one has the dash through it and one doesn't. Yes, and you've got O and E as well from Norwegian. I think it's very similar in Swedish. But again, because if we do end up, and it's very early days, but if we do end up using the official translations for the organizational names and transliteration for the addresses, then that really decides these things because, if those letters come up, they won't come up. They would only come up in the translated form if it was actually part of the official translation. And they would need to be able to be displayed in the transliteration. Okay. That was an interesting discussion, and I would like to emphasize that the opinions I gave then are based on not enough data. I need to see more addresses in more languages, whether we collect that data or whether we borrow it from one of the other working groups. But at the moment, time and time again, whether it's the Chinese example we had or the Japanese one, I've tried this on various European languages. There was a Thai example where we had very similar phenomenon happening. At the moment, a lot of the data is sort of pushing us in one direction, and so we will just have to see over time whether that continues to happen. I'll just come back to, we're getting quite close to the, in fact, I'm thinking maybe it's better if we, I'm just wondering, do we do a little bit more on transliteration or do we wind down? Well, we've got a few more minutes, let's do it. I really made a point, which I think this call has actually emphasized, that the key word with transliteration is actually process, that that there has to be a systematic aspect to it. It's not sort of somebody just transliterating something in a particular way. There has to be some system so that anybody doing it can produce the same result. And so typically there will be government legislation or an ISO standard, but then you may want to make certain exceptions.
knock off some sort of detail from the transliteration from the standard. There was also a thing about reversibility, and basically some of the simpler alphabetic and syllabic alphabetic writing systems or syllabaries. So these are the systems which use syllables rather than letters. Some of those are reversible, but many writing systems aren't. So in my note, I pointed out that Japanese is not reversible because, you know, frequently you can write the same word using different characters, and there's a Japanese name, Ito, which can be written in two common ways in Japanese, and in fact it's a problem with transliteration as well because there are several transliterations for that, as we've already discussed on previous calls. So Japanese is certainly not reversible. So if you transliterate Japanese into Romanization, you may not be able to get the original back if you go the other way. You really are guessing, particularly with names. And then Thai, in fact, is a similar situation because Thai is an alphabetic writing system, but very frequently there is more than one way of writing the same sound, and sometimes a particular way of writing the sound will create a particular tone, and sometimes it's hooked up with tone, but sometimes it isn't. There are just alternative ways of doing things, and so that means that Thai would be very difficult to reverse, I would think, because things which may be written several, sounds which may be written several ways in the Thai script end up looking the same in English. So again, as with the Japanese, you can't get back reliably. Okay, so I think that brings us to the end of the translation and transliteration notes, that part of the wiki. I did have a few more comments about other parts of the questions, but we've really timed out, so I think I shall save those either for the list or for a later call. Does anybody have anything to say about translation or transliteration? And is there any other business? Is the other thing I should be asking? I think a couple of people are having to leave. Well, in that case, many thanks for today's meeting, and I look forward to kicking around some of the things that have come out of it on the mailing list. Okay, thank you very much indeed. Goodbye then.